Welcome. We're glad you've joined us for this Hand in Hand podcast. Hand in Hand is a nonprofit organization, and we provide information, classes, training, and lots of support for parents like you. We call our approach Parenting by Connection, and it's based on the insight that you deserve good support as you parent, and every child needs lots of connection in order to thrive. We offer tools to help you foster support for yourself and connection in your family. We hope this podcast gives you exactly the kind of support you're looking for.
Welcome, and we're very, very pleased to be able to share this with you today. We know how precious your time is, and how challenging lives can be, parenting, professional lives, and everything else. So we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy day, evening, to join us for this teleseminar. And we want to support your work as parents and as professionals, and plan to give you some ideas today that you can use both at home with your family and with other families, other parents and children, and supporting them in around this issue of separation, and particularly traumatic separations that we're all very interested in and concerned about these days. There are over 90 parents and professionals that are registered for today's call, which is why I don't want to start quite yet without everyone here, and there will only be probably a much smaller number. A lot of people sign up but they can't join in the call when we do it, so they listen to the recording later. But I'll talk for just a few minutes about Hand in Hand while people are joining in, and then after that we'll begin our teleseminar on the topic of helping parents with traumatic separations. My name is Shelley Macy, and my co-presenter is Pam Otis. And oftentimes people join these calls with having done a lot of reading and gotten familiar with Hand in Hand, and some not so much. But for everyone, I think it's helpful to recap that it's a nonprofit organization based in California with instructors all over the world, including myself. I'm up in Washington State, and Pam, who is in Michigan, even though her phone sometimes is in Ohio. Hand in Hand was founded about 30 years ago by Patty Whipler, who has wonderful insights about the emotional needs of children based on many years of real life experience, and has a real wonderful ability to communicate both in writing and orally about those insights. And I've benefited so much by her. Hand in Hand brings parents and professionals information, tools, and lots of support. It's very much based in support for the vital work of parenting. We know that the work of nurturing children cannot easily be done in isolation. And Hand in Hand has a variety of offerings designed to support parents and the professionals who work with them, and build support among parents and professionals to continue the work. So it's really a support-building approach. Hand in Hand has free articles on the website, free teleseminars like this one, a free online discussion group, live Facebook discussions, and free access to an inspiring blog with many parents' success stories based on this approach. Besides the free resources, Hand in Hand offers podcasts, classes, and support groups, both in person and online, and intensive trainings for parents and professionals. Pam and I each teach professional intensive courses, and we'll be offering them starting in the fall once again. We hope this teleseminar will give you a taste of what you can expect to learn from the professionals' intensive. And also, Hand in Hand offers consultations for one-on-one support. So you can find all these resources through the Hand in Hand website. So there are four main ideas behind the Hand in Hand approach. Number one, that parents need and deserve support for the emotional challenge of parenting. even when parenting is relatively easy, which I, in a society that doesn't really support parenting very well, it's never easy, and it's a tremendous emotional work, and parents and professionals can build that support and have much more success meeting the needs, meeting our own needs and children's needs. Number two, our children are born to feel connected with us. And this sense of connection is what they absolutely need in order to learn, to build friendships, to build resistance, to build their confidence as they grow. Number three, when children don't feel connected, their behavior goes off track and they signal to us for help. And number four, when we can foster laughter and play without tickling, when we can set limits without harshness and support children to have good hearty cries and tantrums, it helps our children feel more fully connected to us and helps them leave difficult behaviors behind. So parents need support. Children are born to feel connected. When children don't feel connected, their behavior goes off track. And when we foster laughter, play, and play, set limits without harshness, and support them to have cries, big cries and tantrums, they can feel more fully connected, leave those difficult behaviors behind, and learn and grow and flourish and then become resilient. So hand in hand helps parents strengthen and rebuild the parent-child connection, so we can feel successful as we love our children, and as professionals, we can feel successful as we watch families' lives change and flourish when we offer these tools to parents. So I'm going to introduce myself just a little bit. Pam will introduce herself, and we will continue with the content of this evening's teleseminar. Again, I'm Shelley Macy. I'm the mother of two wonderful adult children. My son, Forrest, is 39, and he and his wife have gifted me with an 8-year-old granddaughter named Lily. And my daughter is 37. Her name's Brett, and she and her husband have gifted me with two wonderful grandsons, Tommy, who's 7, and Jamie, who will be 4 at the end of the month. I have 5 more grandchildren around the country from my husband's side. He's my second husband, and they're between 13 and 22 years old. So we've got this whole range of grandchildren. I'm an early childhood educator. That's my field. I taught Montessori preschool starting back in the early 70s. I've been a daycare teacher and program director and I also taught home child care. So I worked with children directly for over 12 years. And since 1989, I've been on the faculty at Northwest Indian College, based on the Lummi Nation Indian Reservation in Northwest Washington State. Now I'm mostly retired, but I still teach one class a year at Northwest Indian College, and I've used hand-in-hand materials, approach, curriculum, and such in the early childhood degree program there ever since hand-in-hand began. And my students tell me that it is one of the most valuable sets of tools and information they get in our degree program. I love teaching it. I love teaching the hand-in-hand professionals intensives, and now that I have time to do that, now that I'm retired. So, Pam, would you go ahead and introduce yourself?
Oh, Shelley, thank you. Thank you for that very sweet introduction to hand-in-hand, too. I love hearing your version. It's good. So I am Pam Otis. I am the mother of now 3 young adult men. Joff is 35 and just finishing a PhD in architectural history and has a job in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, starting at the end of August, teaching his dream. And we then have a foster son, Elijah Juan, who is 32. Elijah Juan is just an inch from finishing his undergraduate degree, and he is married and has 3 sweet grandchildren. He has 3 children, our 3 grandchildren, 11, 8, and 6, Sebastian, Ayla, and Grayson. Sebastian has myelomeningocele, so has a challenging set of medical issues. And both Elijah One and Joss have lived near us for many, many years. And Brower, our youngest, who is adopted, is a lawyer in San Francisco. I've parented these three amazing young men with John Kiley, and we've learned about hand-in-hand principles from the beginning, and I think that in spite of the odds for adopted children and foster children, that in spite of all my and our mistakes, they have really, they have turned into marvelous, marvelous young adult men, which doesn't always happen with children who've come from what they came from before we knew them. I'm also a pediatrician. I practice in a inner city, downtown Toledo, Ohio, a group practice in an outpatient setting and in the inpatient setting. I also developed a palliative care program, and through all of that have used hand-in-hand principles and practice with all of my patients and families, and was able to get a grant and teach hand-in-hand listening principles and skills to about 200 healthcare providers across the state of Ohio. And I treasure teaching hand-in-hand, and I really am enjoying the professionals intensive courses that we've been doing. It made my life as a mother and as a pediatrician and as a wife possible, and it made so much sense for what was happening with the boys, all their growing up. So, yeah, I love the chance to teach it. So, Shelley, shall I go ahead and do my part here?
Please do, Pam. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to start with a little background, sort of looking at the science of the human brain and development, with some things that I think many of us know and is in the popular literature now, but I want to confirm this, that our human brain is an extremely social organ, that we are actually hardwired. Our neurons in our brain are wired to be connected to other human brains, that's critical for our development. This means that children and their developing brains really require, especially early on, almost constant attuned parenting figures in their lives, because our minds actually develop both anatomically and psychosocially with the fluid interaction between that internal neurophysiological process and interpersonal experiences. This is all neuroscience that has developed over probably the last 10 to 15 years. This was not what I learned in medical school. The issues related to separation have the potential to dramatically disrupt this elegant, ideal situation for a child's developing mind. And the issues of separation range from mildly stressful to adverse to traumatic on a continuum. So going to daycare, going to school, parents leaving home for paid or volunteer work are very often stressful separations for both parent and child, definitely worth our attention and thoughtfulness, but they wouldn't be considered adverse or traumatic separations. There was actually a study done that looked at this issue of adverse childhood events, ACEs, we've now come to know them. Those include abuse, neglect, violence, parental substance abuse, emotional behavioral issues that are severe in parents, parents in prison, divorce, death, and forced separation. Kaiser Permanente in California conducted that original study of 17,000 adults looking at their childhood experiences and the adults' current health status and behaviors. And that research really has been aggressively verified over many years and showed that adverse childhood events significantly disrupt children's neurodevelopment, which results in social, emotional, as well as cognitive impairment, leading to unhealthy lifestyle behaviors and the resulting early chronic illnesses that are physical, social, and emotional, and lead to premature death. So trauma is defined in ACEs as ACEs that overwhelms the child's ability to handle or cope with that adverse event. Forced separation, such as what we're seeing with immigrant children, foster children, orphanages, and other situations, and we're not limiting it to that. It can be hospitalizations of the child, of the parents. Those situations are traumatic for children. Divorce can be traumatic. Death can be traumatic. All of these need to be taken into account. So these childhood experiences of disconnection from parents leave hurts, some profoundly deep hurts, that research has shown will affect them equally profoundly for their entire lives unless matching profoundly deep connections are met and built. Those connections must be with adults who have sufficient connections of their own to other adults who can back them, support them, to pour in love, thoughtfulness, and hours of attention to the child over many years. Children recovering from these deep emotional hurts will hopefully have the opportunity to engage with connected, loving, respectful, warm, playful, firm adults on what we call an emotional project to heal that deep, debilitating hurt. So Shelley's going to give us the good news. I've sketched us into a pit here. And Shelley's going to give the good news and the listening tools for a successful emotional project. Thank you, Shelley.
Thanks, Pam. I love the way that you can share that information with the deep caring in your voice. And so let's look at the hand-in-hand tools that help to build this profoundly deep connection. It's the kind of connection every parent wants with their child, and there are some what Patty Whittler calls simple tools, but it takes a lot of support to use them, and very complex things happen when we're able to use these simple tools. So the reason we call it an emotional project is because it's emotional over a long period of time. That when children have been deeply hurt by connection, it isn't a quick fix, and different things manifest over time as as the child goes through experiencing life and grows. And so different things come up at different times in their lives, different ages, just like it does for a child who has not experienced trauma, but it's sort of magnified when a trauma has been experienced. I will start by saying that what we want is to help children to rebuild their hopefulness and to rebuild their resilience, to be able to have good judgment, and to be able to learn and grow to their fullest potential. Part of a good message here is that parents have a tremendous amount of power to help their child heal. And one of the things as a professional, you know, working with parents and with child care providers is being able to help build their confidence that they do have power and that they can use these tools. So I want to talk about the tool of special time, and I'll also talk a bit about stay listening and then a good bit about listening partnerships. We hope to save time at the end for questions so that you can ask anything specific. Special time is a very simple sounding tool. It's a time when you tell a child of whatever age, even if you don't think they can understand the language you're speaking, in my case, English, you say, I want to do whatever you want to do, and we have X amount of minutes. With my own children, we had an hour a week that we set aside, and then if I thought it would be a good idea at other times during the week, I might say, I've got 5 minutes, and we'll do whatever you want to do. And then I would have to keep that commitment. I'd turn on a timer so I would know it would end, because sometimes it just felt like forever that I was doing whatever it was. My son wanted to play video games for one period of time in his life that I knew it would end. But the timer plays an incredible role for the young one. The child, parents feel they spend a lot of, and we do, spend a tremendous amount of time focused on our children. But there's seldom any time that the child can count on that time being theirs without a disruption that the parent has somehow, has the right to do. That if the parent needs to stop to feed the baby or put the dinner on the table or answer the phone, then they do. And so children, that timer is, I have to, as a parent, make a commitment, this is my time, the baby's with their dad or with the nanny or with the babysitter, and I can spend this 15 minutes with Johnny, and I'll do whatever you want to do, and I don't make tea, and I don't even pick the lint off the carpet. This special time means that I notice this child as if it's the first time I've met them, and I get to see what they're interested in, how they're looking today. Are they looking scared? Are they looking eager? And how can I respond so that I'm not changing what they want to do, but actually following their lead? I'm not coming up with suggestions to make it easier, but being with them and thinking with them as they try things. This tool turns out to be incredibly helpful in giving children a sense that someone really wants to be with me, that my parent or my foster parent or this adult who is here, who maybe I've never met before, that I really have someone who has me in their mind. Because, as Pam said, children are hardwired to require connection, all human beings. When there's a disconnection, such as a traumatic separation, a child really goes into an emotional emergency because they have, it is part of our physical nature that we have to be connected with another mind. And so doing special time helps to build that sense, okay, this is a real connection. It's not going to be arbitrarily turned off. And for children having suffered traumatic separation, knowing that it's not going to be arbitrarily shut off is a very, very valuable concept or awareness. Special time with it can come lots of different things. But one thing we can really notice is when a child starts to giggle or laugh about something, and then when we notice that, we can do it again. I was playing with my grandson, Jamie, when he was just learning to walk, and I walked in the room and tripped on the edge of the rug, and he just giggled. And I thought, oh, so I tripped again, and he giggled and giggled. Because, of course, what toddlers are doing is working with the tension of not falling. And we just giggled and laughed, and he started to pretend that he was tripping and falling down and laughed and laughed and laughed. This was, yes, something I did walking in, but I followed his lead. He thought it was funny, so then I did it over and over. Those are wonderful things that we do, because the laughter, the silliness, it releases the lighter side of the tension that our children carry. And it makes it possible for a child to, if they can get off some of the lighter fears, then they can begin to look at and approach the things that are scarier, that were much bigger. Because special time is a commitment from us as an adult to follow the child's lead, it's just such a tremendous way of saying that thing that happened to you is not your entire reality. Here is what can be true in our relationship. Sometimes parents and caregivers who work with a child and who's had trauma will try to do special time 100% of the time, and it can't be done. We have things we have to do. We do have to go shopping. We do have to make the dinner, and we do have to go to work. Children don't need us to pretend that we're going to try and follow their lead all the time. They need us to have a life, to bring them along, to teach them things that they need to be taught. But they need that special time, that protected time, to build the sense of resilience and the sense that, okay, someone really wants to be with me. Because they have heavier work to do. So they need this sort of as the foundation on which they can do the heavier work. For the heavier work, we have a name that I love. This name, we call it stay listening. So children, they need to laugh. They need to get those light tensions off. Oh, and I said something about not tickling. We don't tickle because tickling isn't really, it doesn't put the child in charge. It doesn't let them lead the play. So we can, if a child begs for tickling because that's been a way they've been connecting with adults before, we can put the flat of our palm on their little belly and wiggle. And they can get away from that easily so they can be in charge. But back to the heavier lifting. Children are so, they so do not want to carry around the hurts of trauma that they experienced any longer than they absolutely have to. So they are looking for places to unload. The way that trauma heals, the ways they heal are very familiar to us, and this is looking at emotional processes from a different lens than most of us were ever raised with. That lens is to recognize that the release of tension and grief through crying is a very efficient way that children can release the grief of missing the people who love them, of missing their parents when they were separated from them, of missing a grandparent or a parent who has died, or missing a family member, a daddy or a mommy who's been deployed in the military. There's this sense of huge loss, and crying allows that grief to be expelled. We were raised with the idea in my family that if someone was crying, you needed to stop them and that would stop them from hurting. And that was just fundamentally backwards. It was what my parents had done with them, and so it's how they believed it to be true. But a child who can cry can really grieve and get a sense of, okay, that was a loss, but I am here. I can grow. I'm not done. Stay listening is what we do when we listen to a child cry. It's that way that we put ourselves where a child can see our face, see our caring. We don't have to say much. In fact, sometimes we just really have to hold ourselves back from saying much. We can say the things that have been so helpful to say is, I am here. I will take care of you while your mom is gone, if this is like in a child care situation. If it's in a traumatic situation where a child has really lost people, someone will take care of you. We will find a way to find your parents. And even when you're not sure, the child needs to hear your reassurance that they are going to be all right. That in fact they are, and that they need someone who can be right there with their eyes and their heart and say, I'm here with you. It's going to be all right. Sometimes we need to say, this is a very tough situation. I would change it if I could. Excuse me. I can't change it right now, but I can promise you it won't always be like this. It will change. You will be out of here, or you will have things better, or however we can phrase it. And it's a tone of voice. It's those few words. And we say the words not so they will stop crying, but so that they can be reassured enough to cry out as much as they can, whether that's a 2 minutes or an hour and a half. That children who experience trauma will have very long cries. And they may have tantrums. And tantrums have gotten even a worse rap than crying. In early childhood literature, which I'm familiar with, there are still experts who include tantrums as off-track behavior. And this again is a fundamental mistake. The tantrum itself, the crying, the raging, the unhappiness, are, of course, how a child would feel after being separated from their caring parents. Of course it's how they feel. Not allowing tantrums where there's destruction going on, where a child is left sort of alone or left to their own devices to destroy things or hurt themselves or hurt other people. We need to not abandon children to that. We need to be able to reach for them, to gently but firmly prevent them from hurting themselves or other people or destroying things. But at the same time, we get to give the message that you're a good girl. You're a good boy. You will get through this. And to listen and be there and be the place where you can be the person who they can release to and get rid of the hurts. Now, if you're working with parents, of course, parents, there's a third tool I want to talk about, and that's the listening partnership. Parents too have also been traumatized. The situation that's happening at the border, all of these parents are traumatized by the loss of their children. Every parent wants to protect their child. And it's very emotionally traumatic for a parent to not be able to protect their child and to not be able to support them and listen to them while hard things are going on. So parents really... And when they're reunited with their children, they too have been traumatized. So parents deserve tremendous support to go through both their own emotional healing and to pay attention to their children while they use tools like special time and stay listening. And it's one of the really huge strengths of hand-in-hand that we use listening partnerships peer-to-peer, teaching parents and in our professionals intensive, giving professionals a place where they have a peer-to-peer relationship and can trade equal amounts of time, whether it's 10 minutes each or an hour each, that each person gets listened to, gets drawn out, gets a chance to talk about what's been going on and where the things are hard and where it's completely okay to have tears, that it's completely okay to be angry and have that stay in a confidential place where it's non-judgmental and where you're not going to be given advice, not be told we should do this or do that, because actually we each know more about our situation than we can explain, and the explanation is not as important in a listening partnership as it is to be able to release the tension that we carry around so we can go back there and pay attention to that parent who's paying attention to a child. In a recent professionals intensive that I taught last quarter, it was during the spring, there was a wonderful woman who did parenting support groups and child therapy, and she wanted in her listening partnership turns to, she was had so many feelings about this parent who couldn't listen to their child. And she would talk about her feelings and get upset, and she would laugh or she would be angry. And then she would, by the end of her, even just 5 minutes, she would have an idea of what she wanted to try next. Because she liked the parent, but she would get so irritated. And it just was a wonderful demonstration of how quickly our minds can use good listening that doesn't have judgment and advice attached to it, and that assures us of confidentiality. let me see. I'm looking at my notes to see if there's one other thing I had that I wanted to add. We as professionals need to get listened to, so we can offer listening and our confidence, listening and our confidence in the person we're listening to as they pour out their grief and fear and deep hurt that they have as a result of being separated, the adult, so the adult can then pour out their, offer their listening and pour out their confidence in their child so they can release the fear and grief and the deep hurt feelings they have as a result of being separated. And we have so much that we can offer each other and so much power for good, for love, for this caring that we want so deeply to offer to children and families. I want Pam to talk just a little bit more about setting limits, because children will be reunited and then will just promise they'll always be good. I mean, that's one of the promises they'll make in their minds. And then as they feel safer, sometimes that's when their behavior starts to flare up because they're hurt so badly they cannot think. And Pam, would you be willing to talk about that off-track behavior and the hand-in-hand tool for setting limits?
Sure. I'm delighted. Shelley, I just love hearing your hopeful and practical and detailed, accurate description of these listening tools that work. Thank you so much. I always learn. I keep learning. Yes, as Shelley described, we call behavior off track rather than labeling children as having misbehavior. It's simply usually behavior that's off track that is a signal to us that they are recovering. They're either experiencing disconnection at the moment, or they are looking for an opportunity to heal disconnection that has happened. And as they feel safer, as Shelley described, these moments of off-track behavior can likely increase. And this does happen with reunited children or with adopted children often, or foster children that sometimes are on best behavior initially, and then as they have a sense that there is some attention there, then the off-track behavior can surface more. And so what we do is initially is resist when they do something that we know they know, and they know we know that they're not supposed to do, that just blatant walking over to the wall with the crayon in the hand, looking at me to be sure I'm noticing that they're going to the painted wall with the crayon. So what do I do? And I think for me, the first is to resist that urge, that reaction to blow up with impatience, you know, the sort of, you know, you're not supposed to do that. How could you? And that, again, it speaks to the time I put in, this is speaking for me, with my listening partnership, so that the extent that I utilize my own listening partnerships, my pool of patients got replenished, gets replenished still. And so that it's not as quick a reaction, that my response can be warm and firm and kind and thoughtful and present. And what I want to do is bring a limit, bring myself between that young one with the crayon who's headed toward the wall. And I want to bring myself between that young one and the wall with maybe getting down on the floor with a big smile on my face and my arms out and say, I'm not going to let you take the crayon and put it on the wall. And depending on my tone and my lightness and where that young one is, we may end up in a ball of laughter and some physical contact and laughing away the tension and rebuilding the connection between us. Or that young one may burst into tears and struggle to get to the wall, fight me to get to the wall, and I can respond with warmth and firmness that I'm glad to hear everything. They can show me everything, and that I'm not going to let them put the crayon on the wall. And but my warmth and firmness can be the beginning of them being able to show and offload and expel the hurt feelings, and that they can borrow my confidence in their ability to do this, and that I'm not going to go away. I'm going to stay and listen to them, and that's what we do as we bring the limit, and then we stay and we listen. And sometimes I know that my difficulty has been I bring this limit that I think is sort of an important limit to bring, and they start laughing. And if I haven't replenished my pools of patience, I'm a little annoyed that they start laughing when I bring this limit. So again, my time spent in my listening partnership made this an enjoyable opportunity to reconnect rather than teetering on harsh and confrontational and a power play. So as the child expels those hurt feelings with tears and laughter and sweating and maybe some tantruming, they will actually feel more and more connected. And these are evidences of the emotional project that they are about to heal, those deep, deep hurts. And in between these times of showing these emotions and offloading them, we can notice the shift in them that happens, that they may be more relaxed, they maybe learn a new skill, they try something that they wouldn't have tried before, they interact differently with someone than they would have before. They gain a flexibility and a confidence in themselves. So as Shelley wisely said, there's no quick fix for these deep, deep, deep hurts. But every time they have these opportunities to offload feelings, to unload these, to get them off their shoulders, out of their minds, they regain connection. And that improves the basis for their neural development for the rest of their lives and their health and well-being for the rest of their lives. So every one of these stay listening, special times, and setting limits and then listening does provide a very sound basis for a healthy child, healthy adolescent, and adult. So, Shelley, anything you want to add to that?
No, thanks, Tam. That was a beautiful, I love the example of the crayon on the wall and how it works. And that this is an emotional project, meaning that it keeps on going, but things change. So we get to learn from our child watching those changes. That's great. Well, we have some time for some questions. And I'm going to put you, those of you who are guests on the call, if you press *7, that will give you a chance to ask a question. And I'm going, while you formulate that in your mind, I will read this question that we had emailed to us. and I hope you have one. A parent wrote, our four-year-old son starts school in September, and I found the four visits in June and July really difficult. I've play listened, which is part of special time, and stay listened as much as I can. And the first visit, I stayed with him. I find it very uncomfortable to stay, as I'm the only parent of 30 children who did. We will soon have 6 weeks summer holidays before he starts school, and I want to help him with the transition and help me to be more confident and not be so traumatized when we part. Thank you so much for this question. It's a big deal when we take our children to school for the first time. And what I would say is that you're doing a wonderful job with your child by doing the play listening. If you haven't tried it as special time, the play listening is when you repeat something that allowed a lot of laughter. If you try special times with so that protected time, that's a lovely tool. You stay listening to his feelings, awesome. And I would say that I can't quite tell here, but it sounds like maybe he had a hard time. Maybe you understood he was having a hard time because of his behavior or because he began to cry or because he was clingy. And I would say he is doing his part, that if he's crying, he's actually releasing some of the fears about you going. And you can, find out how he is when you're not there. But it may be that with the work you've been doing, he's able to cry a little bit and then get engaged. The thing that I would recommend is that you get to have your listening partnerships, that how you get the traumatized feelings when you leave him, that as you get a chance to tell somebody who cares, what that's like for you. And boy, do I ever remember that when I sent my children to school for the first time, that I had set up listening partnerships both ahead of time and also on the first day of school. I went directly from dropping Forrest off at kindergarten to a listening partnership, and it was so helpful. I had so much relief from getting to cry and getting to love him and talk about my relationship with him, and then I was much better at seeing how he was actually doing at school and helping with his struggle. Pam, do you want to add anything?
Not a single word except thank you. Well put.
So, Grace or Aiden or Chris or Siebel Systems, Inc., we'd love to hear your question or a comment. Star 7 will allow you to talk, I think. Grace, I'm going to unmute you, Grace.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Hi. So, are we limited to talking about children?
No, not at all.
No, okay. So, how I understand this is that the younger the child, when you start using these tools, the shorter the period when they need to devote to their emotional projects. And the older you are, the longer you've been holding on to these deep, deep hurts, theoretically, the longer you might have to work on the emotional projects. I'm asking this because, you know, I work with adult populations,
yes,
in prison. So do you have any comments on this theoretical understanding that I have?
Mm-hmm. Pam, you want to take that one?
I can, or I can go after you, Shelley. You go ahead.
Mm-hmm. Grace, the good news is, you're right. The more hurts we have and the more we accumulate on top of the original hurts, the greater the amount of pain we're carrying.
Mm-hmm.
That's the hard part. But the good part is that if we can help people sometimes people need to talk about what's happening now, but if we can help them to remember or to remember the feelings from when they were much younger.
Mm-hmm.
So most things that happen in the present, I can listen to a parent during a listening partnership or another professional, and they'll tell me about this really hard thing that's going on. And after I give them some time to do that, I will often say, I bet this is not a new feeling. And almost to a person, they go, oh boy, it sure is not. When's the earliest time you felt that way?
Mm.
But if we can... if we can go to listening to that injured child and give them the chance to deeply, deeply release feelings from when they were an injured child, it's like they get a chance to have a whole new perspective on the things that happened since then.
Mm-hmm.
It's sort of like the dominoes, if you have a row of dominoes set up and you tip over the three at the end, just three go down. But if you can tip the first one or the third one or the 18th one, then it sort of takes the distress out of the hundreds that are ahead of it. So that caring about the young one can really make a difference for the parent or the adult or the incarcerated felon or whoever.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Mhm.
Pam, do you want to add anything there?
Oh, I agree completely, Shelley. That, and so many of the principles apply. That, Grace, your warmth and your caring for that individual and your confidence in his or her ability to heal and to recover, can help us reestablish trust and a willingness to talk and a willingness to cry, ability to laugh. That those human qualities are never gone, but they can sometimes be pretty far buried and protected under calluses that have had to develop in order to get through. And I would also say that I have also done some work in prisons, and that my time spent in my listening partnership about my feelings about them and their situations and you know what's happened to them made a lot of difference to me being able to be relaxed with
them.
It's completely hopeful.
Yes.
It's sort of like having a scene or you know, in my world as a gardener, I can either pick at little leaves on the outside of a weed, or I can get my spade fork and get that great big root out, as Shelley described, to have them have a chance to talk about their earliest memories. And it can certainly... It works. Mm-hmm. Great question. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Well, Pam, we only have about a minute left, and would you just share a little bit about what the parent seminar and or you know, closing for us? Thanks.
Yeah, I would be glad to.
Did I say parent professionals intensive?
I knew exactly what you meant. So Hand in Hand has lots of resources, as Shelley described at the beginning. And one that we really want to feature tonight is the 8-week Professionals Intensive that Shelley and I and two other marvelous teachers teach who have great experience and great training teaching these Professionals Intensives. So we all bring different strengths and different experiences. Shelley in early childhood, Maya in counseling, Robin in counseling, and me as a pediatrician and doing counseling with that. So there's a lot of experience that we bring and a real devotion to the hand-in-hand principles. Our professionals intensive is 8 weeks. That we get information to you about these listening skills, and for the people who attend, both as parents and as professionals. So we address both in the experience, and people have changed their practices based on these classes, and reports are. Reviews are excellent of what they learn, and the classes are kept small. There's not more than 6 of us in a class at a time, so that there is a time for us to do listening time on the calls, and we provide assistance and backing to try all these listening skills. So the Professionals Intensive is coming up, another one in September. We are at week 4, I believe, for our summer series. There is a series in the fall, the winter, the spring, and the summer. And we would be delighted to have you register any time now, actually, for the fall series. You can go on to the Hand in Hand website and click on Resources with Experts, I think is the correct click and register for the Professionals Intensive. We can also suggest the Listen book that Patty Whipler and Tasha Shore wrote, as well as articles, podcasts, and membership in the Facebook free Facebook connection and blogging. So, yes, many, many, many resources, and we look forward to connecting with you, hopefully, on the Professionals Intensive. Anything else, Shelley?
Thank you so much, Pam, and thank you to all of you who've been here. And we look forward to any further connection that you'd like to have with Hand in Hand.
Thank you.
You can all say goodbye if you want.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
Goodbye.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you.
Bye, Grace. Bye, Chris. Bye.
Thanks for joining us. Hand in Hand is here to help you get the support you need for your work as a parent. To download podcasts on additional parenting topics, go to handinhandparenting.org/store. We look forward to connecting with you again soon.